eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
The following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Boone Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Boone, and today on the program, I'm joined by a seven-time All-Star. Won four Silver Sluggers, he hit 464 homers, and he was a two-time winner of a friend of mine and a friend of Nelly's, and that's the Edgar Martinez Award for the Outstanding Designated Hitter. Ladies and gentlemen, Nelson Cruz. Nelson, thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me on, buddy.
All right, how's you're in the club now? I've been there for about 15 years, but you've only been retired for a short time. You've only been out of the game for a short time. How is it so far?
It's been good, man. Enjoying the free time that I always want to have with my family. Doing the things that I want to do after I'm done playing. But especially just spending time with my kids. You know, that's something that I enjoy.
Very cool. Okay, this time a year ago, you were in spring training with the San Diego Padres, and you were about to go off. I think you're the perfect guy for this. You played in the big leagues for so long. You played 19 seasons. Your first year was actually at the end of my career, 2005. There were new rules being implemented. Now, I'm sitting here as an ex-player, as a fan, looking at these new rules and thinking, wow. For the veteran players, for the veteran hitters, that you have your routine, you go to the plate, we have certain checkpoints we go to, and all of a sudden, you're on a time clock. What were you thinking going into the season? And let's go one at a time. The time clock where you had to engage the pitcher at the 7-second mark, and then he could do whatever he want. What were you thinking going into it? And after it was implemented and you played some games, how'd you like it?
Yeah, before last year, I asked some players in the minors, like, how was it? Like, what do you like? What do you don't like? You know, they're all different opinions, but most of them, they're positive. And I went to the season thinking, at least the game is going to end up quicker. We're going to have less time on the field. We can rest quicker. So one start, you know, like anything that you try new, you're going to be a little bit uncomfortable. And then once you figure it out, it's like, okay, this is what it is, you know. We all got to deal with it. So let's enjoy it. And at the end of the day, you know, for the good of the game, fans can be home earlier. They join the game, and we as a player get benefit from it, you know. And then, like I say, I love it, and I thought it was a great job from MLB implementing that.
It was amazing because I'm sitting there on the outside and I'm thinking, this is going to be rough. You know, these hitters aren't used to that. How are we going to be ready on time? But as I watched it, it seemed like you guys kind of conformed to it like it was no big deal once you got through spring training, got into the season. As a fan, as somebody in the media now, I loved it because you're right. The fans knew it, you knew it wasn't going to be a 3.5-4 hour game. You knew it was going to be about 2 hours and 40 minutes. Everything seemed to be crisper, moving along. Everybody's kind of on their toes and ready to go. So I went in very pessimistic, and I came away from it, and I thought, wow, I was really wrong. My instincts were wrong. It ended up being a great thing for the game. So I'm with you. I thought it was great, but I just wanted that player's perspective because, you know, I didn't get in the box with the time clock.
We as a player love it, you know, especially, like I said, we can get home earlier. For the good of the game, if I have a son and he need to go to school the next day, so I know at least I'll be home by 10. We have started a chance to watch the game, and the next day he can go to school. So it plays different roles where everything is for the good of the game, you know?
How did you talking to teammates of yours that were base stealers or the catchers with the – you could only throw over twice pitchers – the two time that you can disengage from the rubber, that was different. You know, I've talked to some players from my generation that were base stealers going, wow, I'd love to have those rules. When I played, I just stole 80 bases. You know, we always say that the old guys always say back in my day, if we would have done that, that's what you do when you get older. You're too young now, but in a while you'll be saying that in my day. So what did they say? Did the base stealers like, I liked it too, because I think what it did, was it encouraged? We've been getting away from it a little bit in Major League Baseball, base running. You know, it seems like they don't move runners like they used to. The fundamentals of the game have changed a little bit. But I think it did what it was supposed to do. It encouraged the running game again. It had some more action. I think the fans really liked it. What about your teammates?
Yeah, I mean, we understand everything of, like, going and creating situations and creating situations for the fans, you know, get the fans in, the players in ball. Like, you don't necessarily have to be the hitting homers, but you can create runs stealing bases. And a good example of that was the D-backs, you know, they did it stealing bases and playing the small ball, and they went all the way to the World Series. So going back to your questions, depends on what you see. As a catcher, it was like, wow, what are they doing? You know, I cannot cut anybody. If you're a fast runner, then this is a paradise. That's exactly what I need. But going back to the question was like, you can find different opinions, but for the good of the game, again, the fans like it because it created more excitement, you know, when stealing bases and you have the expectations of, oh, this guy's going to go at some point.
I think something that's been talked about, and I think it's inevitable with the technology we have these days and how much the game has changed. I think the robo umps are coming. I just do. Yeah, I know they're going to do it in the minor leagues. As an old school kind of player, I like to leave alone as much as you can with the game. I love the human element, but there's nowadays, and this is probably different from when you first came into the league. It was different then. The umpires were different. You didn't have that stupid box that we can all watch on TV and everybody's the greatest umpire in the world from their couch, when really that's not truly even the true strike zone. But it seems like you've got the iPads in the dugout. You can tell whether it's a ball or a strike right after the fact. It's just different. Your takes on robo-ump? Do you think it's going to be good for the game if it's eventually put in and taking it out of the umpire's hand?
I mean, I have a chance to play in, like you say, in two generations. And last year, I went to rehab in AAA, and I got a chance to play in three situations where the strike zone was calling by the umpire, you can challenge. And the other one was the whole game, just be there, you watching ball strikes, and like, wow, at least I know that the umpire is not screwing me. Oh, I know my strike zone, but sometimes I have to be aware how big the strike zone of the umpire or how small it is, where he tends to call balls and strikes. And I know I can be consistent taking the pitches that I know that I ball, and I don't expect the umpire to call it. So I like it. The three games that I played in the minors last year, like I said, rehab. And at the end of the game, just use one to make the right call. Like when they implemented the replay, everybody was like, oh, you know, you don't see what happened. And at the end of the day, you want to be just to be right, you know, and be fair and equal to everybody.
Have you seen a difference since you broke in as a rookie to say 2023 as far as the umpires, the way they are? I remember as a player, and this is just me, you know, I play second base, so I got an umpire with me every day. Now, my job was I buddied up with all the umpires. I asked them where they're going to dinner. They needed it because I know in 2 days they're going to be behind the plate calling balls and strikes. That's just the culture, the way it was. We talked to the umpires. I don't know that I see it that much these days. It's more of a business and we take the field. You would know better than anybody. Has it changed? How good are the umpires nowadays versus when you came in?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I think everybody is improving, you know. They give you the little thing that you mentioned, it put pressure on, I guess, and then because everybody's watching now. Like, I was watching that game, the World Series that Levan Hernandez was throwing, and they put a little box there. And I go, oh my God, how far away are those pitches, you know?
Yeah. Eric Gregg.
If you do that right now in this DNA, like today, everybody will be blowing up the umpire, you know? Even because you can basically know what pitches are close. I mean, if they're close pitches, you know, you cannot do anything about it. That's the nature of the game of the umpire calling balls and strike. You know, he cannot do anything with it. But when you see stuff like that, you go back like, wow, you wish we can have that. At least, you know, the umpire is not going to go that far calling pitches that are way out of the strike zone. So, like anything, like I mentioned earlier, like anything new, you're always going to be skeptical, you're gonna work, you're gonna like it. But once you try it, like even a few years ago, what they told us, you cannot stay out of the box when you're hitting. That was hard on everybody. Like, wow, I cannot do that. And now it's part of routine. Nobody leave the box anymore. Right. So just creating less dead time in creating more plays in more situations where the fans are more interesting in the game and in watching the game, but the different way.
And I just think too, you know, I like I said, at first I was against it. The more I think about it, it's like that's one less thing I've got to worry about. Like the worst thing we can't stand is when an umpire establishes his zone early in the game, and the good ones do. And you know today, hey, maybe he's given an inch off the outside corner, but he's given me that inside corner. I know the rules going in. I know with two strikes what he's calling, what he's not. We hate when he gets inconsistent. Wait a minute, that wasn't a strike in the second inning, you know. So with the, if it was a robo-ump situation, at least going in, you know the strike zone. And that's one less thing as a hitter that
you don't have to worry about. Yeah. No, and at least if it's a strike, it's nobody's fault. It's my own fault. Like, the umpire is not doing nothing against me. The strike zone is this, and that's it. That's it for everybody. It don't matter if you're a rookie or veteran, if you're a side young throwing or the rookie pitching, you know, it's going to be the same for everybody. So at the end of the day, like I said again, you know, you want to be equal. You want to be fair for everybody.
I love having a guy like you on that's freshly retired and you've played for a long time and you've got to see it. My generation was different. I loved playing. You know, mine was early 90s to late 2000s. I loved my generation. I loved everything about it. I loved my childhood growing up, my dad's generation. I love watching those games. It always seems like you hear older players, and they're always pouting and crying, and, oh, back in my day, you know, we covered that before. And my thought is, you know what? It's not our game anymore. Whoever's playing the game currently, that's their game. It's not for Brett Boone to say, oh, that's wrong and that's right. No, whatever the players, current players decide the game is, it is. I look at today's game. I'm getting used to it now a little bit. The emotion in the game, the celebrating, and at first glance, it was like, whoa, you know, and you'll probably hear a lot of ex-players. Well, back in my day, if you did that, we're going to drill you in the neck.
Drill you.
You're right. Yeah, I mean, that's what you hear. That's what the old people say all the time. Yes. You got to live both ends of it. In 2005, when you broke into the big leagues with Milwaukee, there were a lot of unwritten rules. And if you stepped out of line, you will get drilled. It seems like in 2023, it seems like there is no unwritten rules. I see guys doing stuff and I'm going, well, if the pitchers are okay with it, they're okay with it. Who am I to say what's right and what's wrong? History will judge each and every one of our generations. That's not for us to decide. I've got to change with the game if I want to keep up with the game. I love baseball. It's been my whole life. And at first, when, you know,
I believe that was my case, you know. So I come through the old generation, and now I was in the young generation of players, and I have to change to with the mentality and the nature of the game, you know, old school, now new school. And I always was like, I just want the players to have fun, to enjoy the game, feel like the clubhouse is their home. Like, whatever you do at your house, do it here. Just respect the game, respect your teammates.
Right.
And that was my mentality always, even when I was coming up, because it was hard for a rookie. You cannot do much. Like, you corner, you don't do much. Be quiet. Don't talk. You know, that's the spot. That's the way you deserve to be. And coming up, I was like, wow, I think that's wrong, you know, because everybody's helping the team to win games, you know. It don't matter if you're a veteran or not. I mean, you have your own rules, and you're the one in charge of the clubhouse. But at the same time, you also charge of make sure the players that you have in your clubhouse, they're productive, no matter who they are, you know.
No, I agree with you. And you know, when you come from a generation where we were taught when we get to the big leagues, you don't speak until you're spoken to, until you're kind of, you prove yourself at that level. And it could be tough at times proving yourself and going through that, you know, that section of your career. But to your point, if you've got a great player, especially a great young player, instead of giving him a hard time when he comes up, make him as comfortable as possible to get the best play you can get out of him from the get-go. You know what I'm saying? Instead of, who knows, everybody has a different personality. Everybody responds differently to how they're treated. But maybe if you treat them good, put them in a successful environment, you get the most out of your talent.
Yeah. I mean, more relaxed you are, you'll be more likely to be successful and do good. So why you want to put pressure and talk for the pressure they have to produce at a young age? So that was always my thought. When I had the chance to command and dictate what's going on in the clubhouse, I want to make sure that the young guys, the ones that are coming up, feel comfortable, you know, and feel like this is their home. But like I say, at the same time, you got to respect the game, respect the clubhouse, but this is your house. Whatever you feel like to do it here, you know?
Yeah, I was, as a young player, man, they made me wear a dress 3 or 4 times, and I loved it. I'd cut it off short and just ran with it. They didn't know what to do, and they, after a while, they're like, this is an effect in Booney, you know, it's not, and eventually they just stopped doing it. When I became that veteran in that clubhouse, I'm with you. Respect was at the top of the list for me. Respect the guys in this clubhouse that have been here for a long time and done it. And then go out and play. I don't need to humble you as a veteran player. This guy on the mound tonight, he's going to humble you for me. He's going to teach you.
He will do my job.
Right. He's going to make you grow up. And that's kind of the tact I took as a veteran player. Seeing both sides of it, what do you like better? When you first came up or how the game is currently?
Well, I mean, you can see really different stuff going from what is good, what was good there and what is good now. That part of, like, you, the rookie, stay there, don't talk, you know, I don't like that part. But I also love the part of teammates going out, having a good time. I'm the veteran. I'm going to take you to the store. I'm gonna buy you some clothes, you know. We're losing that part now in this generation. But the other part is, like, you have so much technology, you have so much nutrition, psych, I mean, from the doctors to the gym, flights, hotels, you know, everything is just getting better for the good of the players. So that's the side that I love.
The new
generation. Yeah, the money, obviously, too. Yeah.
The money's gotten a lot better, too.
Yeah.
I've had Edgar on the show. I've had David Ortiz on the show. You are obviously one of the great designated hitters of this generation. You played outfield early in your career, and I think you played the field consistently to around 2016. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Right field, left field?
Yes, right field. Yeah.
Edgar, to this day, one of my favorite teammates, still one of my best friends, and I often asked him about it. And I said, how tough is it, you know, being a DH? For me at second base, man, and we both know hitting is so hard, especially at big league level. It was kind of a retreat for me when my swing wasn't right, or I wasn't swinging the bat well. I wasn't contributing. Man, I could take that glove and make a difference. I could make a big play and feel like I'm contributing in some way. And I used to look at Edgar, who was my DH in Seattle, and I think, man, it's got to be tough when you're a DH. Yes. That's all you do, and you're scuffling like I am right now. You can't go turn a big double play to save a game. Mm-hmm. You've got to kind of live with it. And he taught me, he said, Booney, because he was a third baseman early, and he said when they came to him and said, we want you to be a designated hitter, he said he was pissed. He said, I wanted no part of it. I hated it. He said, until I just finally accepted it. And I said, okay, how can I be the best designated hitter I can? And he came up with a routine. I remember watching him during the game. He'd be on the bike after his first at bat. He'd be here. He'd be there. He had a routine. When you first started to DH and you weren't playing right field or left field, was that a tough adjustment for you? Was it easy? I don't know that I could have done it.
Yeah, I mean, my first year that I was DHing was when I signed with Baltimore. And I remember, like, I hate it. Like, I hate, like, 210, something like that, when I was DHing, like 3-something when I was playing outfield, because I hate it. Like, wow, I don't like it. Then when I went to Seattle, it was the same situation. I was hitting good when I was playing the outfield, and I was scoffing when I was hitting DH. And then 2017 came, and they told me, you're going to only DH. And like, wow, okay, now I have to really locked that in, you know. I cannot be putting excuses of, you know, I want to play in our field or whatever. I just have to do it, you know. So once I put that mentality on, everything changed and I become a good hitter right after that. But everything is like the mindset, you know. I try to find a routine. I asked David Ortiz, I asked Edgar, and I feel like I want to do something that I feel comfortable doing it. Feel like I'm running in the back and all that. I spend a lot of energy on. So what I was doing, it was just don't see, just keep moving around. So once you see, you hold off. You know, it's hard to go back and warm up. You had to do the back or whatever. So the things that I was doing, they just stand up the whole game, you know. Swing the cage, stay seated, and just that was my thing.
I never had to do. I mean, I didn't even like Nelson. I hated when I had to, if I had a day off and I had to come pinch hit in a big situation, I just didn't like it. I didn't feel like I was into the game. And Ortiz told me, he said, Booney, I just had to get to a point where I was pinch hitting four times a game. And he said, exactly. And once I got to that mindset, he said, it was off to the races. And obviously David, you know, one of the greatest to ever do it.
Yeah, what happened? Was like that, like even when we play in the National League, I know I'm not gonna play, but I'm gonna pinch hit, and I was like, okay, I gotta treat it like it's my first at bat of my DHing day, and right. I mean, right after that, I started doing good. Also, when I got pinch hit,
yeah, it's amazing. It is. It's a mindset. It's something that doesn't just happen overnight. I always envied the guys that were great pinch hitters, and I don't know if you remember a guy named Lenny Harris. Yeah, who was a teammate of mine in Cincinnati for a lot of years. I think he's got the all-time record for most pinch hits. And he was a big part of some of my Cincinnati Reds teams. And I used to tease him all the time. He'd say, Booney, I need to get a couple starts at second base. You know, can you get hurt or something like that? And I used to laugh. But I looked at his position and I thought, wow, that's tough. He might have to sit there for 2 or 3 days. And because Lenny was our first bat off the bench, left-hander, it was never going to be in a comfortable situation. Yeah, it was never going to be in an 8-2 game. It was going to be against the closer in the ninth inning, 2-1 game. And he hasn't swung a bat in a game situation in 3 years. I really had a lot of respect to not only the guys that were able to do that, but were able to do it successfully.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a great challenge, you know, like, I had the chance last year to do it on a regular basis, and wow, this is hard, because I was facing, like you mentioned, late in the games, the closer, you know, and all that. But you know, it take like a mindset to do it, like you said. You know, that's my job. That's what I had to do, and don't complain about it. You know.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So many great years you had. And through the years, I loved watching you. I knew when you were a young player, when you were in Texas, I'd watch. I said, this kid's going to be good. And I loved watching your whole career, and especially your time in Seattle. And just the way you went about your game, you know, you were always a professional, and I was always a fan. I'm not a fan of that many people, but I remember watching you in Seattle. I like that Nelson Cruz. Plus, you hung on to the bat with both hands. I like that too. I got a question for you about. I live in San Diego, and you came down here. You played for the Padres a year ago. I had big expectations for that team on paper. It looked, you know, you guys were loaded, especially on the offensive side. Snell ends up winning the Cy Young Award. You had Musgrove and Darvish. And, you know, I know Musgrove got hurt and there were some injuries throughout the. What do you think happened to that San Diego Padre team a year ago where so much talent and the pitching numbers were really good too, as far as statistically.
I don't know how the numbers offensive side went up doing it, but I think that was the downside of it. I mean, we expect him to rake and do good as a hitter, and I think that was the downside of the season. You know, we didn't produce the way we're supposed to be doing. Still now thinking like, what was going on? Like, what was the deal? Like, how come? You know, but like in baseball, you can never predict. You know, it doesn't matter how good you are, but it's hard for a team to put everything together. You know. But that's what I believe it happened. You know, the offense wasn't there.
Yeah, and
we
it's
have
crazy.
Good games. We have good games, and then we go for like two or three games where we don't score enough. We lost a bunch of games, 2-0, 3-0, 3-1. Right. You know, and I believe that was that because pitching it was incredible. Like you mentioned, we had the Cy Young, we have good pitching there, Waka, Mostrom, you know, and going on Lugo. But I think the offense was the one who was missing.
And you're right. You can never predict this game. You know, everybody just on face value, of course, what the Dodgers did this offseason. And you're with the Dodgers. I'll get to that in a second. Unbelievable, the talent level that the Dodgers have. But you never know. You know, you got to factor in.
No, you got to go there and play the game, you know.
You got to go there and play the game.
And hope everybody's healthy. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, did anybody think, you mentioned at the top of the show, did anybody think a year ago, Arizona, you know, they everybody was saying, oh, Arizona can't win this series. They can't win this series. Next thing you know, they're in the World Series. They're two games away from winning a World Series championship. Yeah. Nobody gave them a chance. That's a little bit Major League Baseball, and I think it has something to do with the new schedule where there's 12 teams that make the playoffs, whoever gets hot at the right time.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean – you just have to make the playoff. Once you're there, you know, anything can happen. And you see a lot of cases where wild cards are the one to win the World Series, you know, and the favorite teams, they out the first round. So you always have to take that in consideration.
I got a few questions and I'll let you out of here. As a young man growing up, I know you're no, I'll make it so. Who was your favorite player? Who did you look to as the big leaguers as when you were a kid? Who was your favorite players?
Well, I watched Ken Griffey as well. I know everybody loved Ken Griffey. But Vladdy was the one that I always want to be like, you know. I remember playing to the minors. I hit with no batting glove in some points. Even in the big league, sometimes I hit with no batting glove. I had a chance to play with him, and I was one of the dreams come true, you know, playing with the guy that I was admired to be like, and just to get to know him, the great heart that he has, you know, the great personality, and man, they're like really humble. So that was one of my favorite years that I have as a player, just to be able to play with the guy that I always want to be like.
I remember playing against Vladdy, and I can't explain him to people. I said, "You first of all, you can't pitch around him because he can hit anything. You know, you bounce at everything."
I think he would better if you pitch right down the middle.
He was unbelievable. You played a lot of places. What's your favorite city out of all of them?
Wow. Well, I gotta mention two. I think Seattle and Texas are the two ones that I like the most. Yeah.
Today. Nelson Cruz, yeah, you can pick three players you like to watch, three big leaguers.
Three players. Ohtani, obviously, you know, Fernando Tatis, and Mike Trout.
Pretty good three. Mm-hmm. Nelson Cruz, what are you most proud of?
Wow. I think the Roberto Clemente Award, you know, the impact that you got off the field, people that you touch change life, you know. It doesn't get better than that. Maybe hitting homers is better than seeing that. You know, I'll get the same smile on my face. Just to see people going like without teeth, and then you see him leaving with that smile and change, going to life, seeing the life and seeing the world different, you know, more confidence and whatever they got to go and go against it.
Last thing, and I'll let you get out of here. You're working with the Dodgers. We talked a little bit off camera. Tell the people watching or listening to the Boone podcast right now, what is Nelson Cruz doing for the Dodgers in that star-studded clubhouse right now?
Well, right now I'm helping, you know. Sick kids that need help, they call me, like, I think you should help this guy. He need your help. So I go there and talk to him, see what's going on, and go from there. I guess staying the game without playing, and doing what you love, you know, because it's hard. Like, you play for so many years, you know, it's hard just to leave the game. If you can stay around, at least doing something where you can bring that experience that you have to the years, to the young generation, and help through that, you know, it doesn't get better. So that's what I'm doing, just helping kids develop and get better at whatever they're doing.
Well, the Dodgers got a good one in Nelson Cruz. I appreciate you coming on the podcast today, Nelson. What a career that you had. Like I said, I was a big fan, and I loved watching you play and you, giving back now. You know, everybody.
I love watching you play too.
Oh, well, thank you.
I was a huge fan of you.
But I'll tell you, through the years, you know, I'd get up to Seattle time and again, and I always would ask, "Hey, what's Nelson a good guy? Tell me he's a good guy because I love watching him play." They said, "Oh, he's one of the best," you know, and getting to talk to you just briefly today, I can feel that. And I think you have the ability. You're one of those guys that everybody respects so much, not just for the numbers you put up in the game, but for how you went about your business. So I think you're going to be a huge plus for that Dodgers team having you. And it's cool too, because you played with and against a lot of these guys. You're still fresh. And now you say, now I don't have to chase the breaking ball like you, but I can help you. Well,
Plácido Polanco, we went out, we went to a cigar bar, and when I was coming to the hotel, I was like, wow, I don't have to think about who's going to face tomorrow or I'm going to take batting practice. You know, this is awesome. Right.
So I don't have to think about it. I struck
relax,
out.
You know, and go out there and just enjoy what you're doing. Just from your mind, just bring that to the other generation, and whatever help you to become a good player, just give that to them. It comes natural, so I don't have to worry about workout or wow, this light is nasty today. The guy's throwing 100.
That's right. You're not sitting in the corner twitching because you chase that breaking ball off the plate. Yeah. I've had nightmares. I still have nightmares, Nelson. It never goes away. I'll wake up in the middle of the night. I woke up the other night. I was having a dream, and I just signed with some team. Yeah, I'm 54 years old, and I was in the clubhouse. And, you know, I'm in pretty good shape, and I'm talking to myself. I'm going, how am I going to go out there and hit? They think I can hit. They signed me. I signed, but I can't hit like I used to hit. But they don't know, and they think I can. What am I going to do when everybody figures it out? So you still have nightmares or dreams sometimes that put you back in uniform, and then you wake up and you go, whew. Okay, I don't have to face. I don't have to go face Kershaw today. I don't have to go face DeGrom. You know, so
yeah.
Anyway, it's been a pleasure, Nelson. For all you out there watching the Boone Podcast now, newly on YouTube, or if you tuned in and listened, I appreciate you tuning in. And until next time, keep it right here, Brett Boone Podcast. Thanks, Nelson.
All right, thank you.